Good morning, everyone. This is Nadia Shamsuddin coming to you live on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And I have a guest this morning. She's written a fascinating book. But first, I wanted to talk with you a little bit about what happened late last night with the FISA bill. It is poised to pass the Senate. Senator Russ Feingold is standing on the floor of the Senate right now, and he isn't happy. Now, the Democrat from Wisconsin has had a rough day. The effort of Feingold and his allies to amend the Protect America Act has largely failed on a grand scale. An amendment from Senator Chris Dodd that would deny telecom companies retroactive immunity for helping the government eavesdrop on phone calls without a warrant after 9/11 was voted down, as was an amendment from Senator Arlen Specter that would have substituted the government for the telecom companies in pending legislation over the warrantless wiretapping program. An amendment offered by sitting Senator Dianne Feinstein that would have made the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act the sole authority for warrantless wiretapping program has also failed. You know, I talked about this last month when Cheney was talking with Congress and really pushing them to include the language in this bill that would give immunity to the telecom companies. And a few of our congressmen and congresswomen filibustered. They gave some eloquent speeches. I encourage you to go on to C-SPAN, look for Chris Dodd's speech. It was quite eloquent. Very, very patriotic. And unfortunately, a lot of the people that agree with the stance that we take here at RBN are very unhappy this morning. I turned on the news early this morning, and our illustrious president was announcing how pleased he was that they came up with a bill that he would be willing to sign. At the heart of the controversy was whether or not the government would be able to give immunity to the telecommunications companies if people thought that they would be sued, that they would be given immunity. And this is a very serious, I'm very upset about this morning. Anyway, we're going to take our first break. We'll be back with our special guest, so just stay with us.
Are you new to freeze-drying foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials. Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle.
For some time now, you've listened to our corny DidYouRobBillGates.com ads. So let's get serious for a moment. DidYouRobBillGates.com can really show you how to make money with your own home-based business and will give you the ability to quit your job, pay off debt, or how about buying some silver and gold for the future or retirement? What about just being around more for your family? DidYouRobBillGates.com can show you how to increase your cash flow so you can get the things in life you want. What if all it took was answering the phone? Could you do that? When the cash flow increases, it's amazing what you can do. It's about independence and freedom. DidYouRobBillGates.com can show you how. Don't wait any longer. Go to DidYouRobBillGates.com. That's DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Well, good morning. We're back. Thanks for hanging in there with us. We're having a little bit of technical problems on my end, but I hope you can hear me clearly. And just before the break, I was talking about the FISA bill that has been set to pass the Senate. It now goes to the House. Feingold, who called it a dangerous piece of legislation, and I agree, says, quote, "This bill is a tragic retreat. It is an abdication of this body's duty to stand up for the rule of law." The Senate is expected to have a final vote on the bill this afternoon, and then it goes to the House, which is battling the clock. That chamber will adjourn on Thursday and Friday for the funeral of Representative Tom Lantos, so they're racing against the clock to get it done. The Protect America Act, which enhanced the government's wiretapping program under FISA, expires on Friday, and that's why they've been pushing so quickly to get this through. The current legislation will now replace that, and the White House has said it would not support another extension. So he's really pushing to get this thing through. Well, this morning I'm happy to bring on a very special guest, Frances Hill. She is calling in from London. She was born in London and educated in England and then worked as a journalist in both England and the U.S. During the 1980s, she published two novels, followed in 1995 by her acclaimed account of the Salem witch trials entitled A Delusion of Satan. Her second book on the Salem witch trials, The Salem Witch Trials Reader, was published in 2000. Her most recent book, Such Men Are Dangerous, The Fanatics of 1692 and 2004, was published by Upper Access in March 2004. She lives in London, but spends her summers in Connecticut, and she's with us this morning. Good morning, Frances.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming on the show. It's a fascinating book.
Thank you.
You know, in the beginning of the book, you draw a rather austere and harsh social order that was in place in the Massachusetts Bay Colony. Could you give us a picture of what life was like then and what set the stage for the Salem witch hunts and how you correlated that to the current Bush administration?
Yes. Life was extremely harsh in every way, physically and mentally, because physically the Puritans were carving a place to live out of the wild forests. It was you know, very tough living. Mentally, it was harsh because of the Puritans' beliefs. I think everybody knows that they had left England in order to be able to follow their own religion in their own way in the New World, in New England. But I think perhaps what people don't understand as much is that they believed that their religion was the only one, that they were the elect, and that their feeling that really all amusements, practically all ordinary human enjoyments were sinful, was the only way of being good, to espouse those views and to follow those views. And they made everybody else in the colony with them, the servants, the slaves, and so on, who weren't Puritans themselves, actually follow this way as strictly as they did themselves. So there was a very repressive atmosphere. They lived a life where there was sort of no way of letting off steam, of just enjoying life, indulging oneself a little. Life consisted of hard work, prayer, going to the meeting house to very long services, listening to fiery sermons. It may seem like a caricature, but it isn't. It really was like that. And they had as I've said, they had a worldview that was very black and white. They did see everything in terms of good versus evil, with no shading, no shades of grey. They saw themselves as good, as knowing how to be good and not believing there was any other way of being good. And as a result, they despised and would not tolerate any other view, including, it seems to us so strange now, but they had absolutely no tolerance for Quakers or Baptists, other people who came to the colony, expecting to be able to make a life there too. They were tremendously threatened by them because to them they were dissidents. And they did, in fact, whip and hang Quakers and Baptists who came later. They weren't able to do that by then because the British Crown, who they had their colony as part of, they had a charter under the British Crown. The British Crown, by that time, later in the 17th century, had put pressure on them to be a little less draconian. But they banished Baptists. They wouldn't tolerate them in their society. And as a result of this worldview of good versus evil, they were great ones for scapegoating anyone who didn't believe in them, believe as they did, and conform to their ways of thinking, and who they saw as other, as different. And the most striking example is that of the American Indians, who they did actually regard as followers of Satan. I mean, quite literally followers of Satan. It wasn't just a figure of speech. Cotton Mather, who was one of the leading ministers in the colony, did actually preach that the world that was not yet conquered for Christ was under the rule of Satan, and so the whole of the American continent that hadn't been conquered by the Puritans in Massachusetts was under the rule of Satan, and that meant that all the Native Americans were under the rule of Satan, and they were seen as a constant threat to the Puritans. They were seen as wanting to reconquer the land the Puritans were in, not just for themselves, but for their leader, who was Satan. And, of course, with this attitude to the Native Americans, this gave the Puritans carte blanche to treat them as badly as they wanted to for their own ends. And they did treat them very badly indeed. They tricked them and stole from them and got their cooperation and then attacked them, you know, once they'd got their confidence and stole their lands and so on. And as a result of this, the American Indians became fairly ferocious in their attitudes to the Puritans, not surprisingly. Which,
well, naturally, anybody would defend their own land, their own property.
Exactly. But then, you know, the Puritans were able to say, well, the Native Americans have done this and that and the other to us, and sort of stir up even more hatred against them, you know. So it was a downward spiral. But the Puritans also, in fact, scapegoated the people at the bottom of their society. They saw them not just as unfortunate because they were poor or even destitute, but lacking in moral fiber, lacking in proper godliness. They weren't making enough effort. I could give you a brief quote from Cotton Mather on this, because he puts it very starkly. He says, "As for your common beggar, 'tis usually an injury and a dishonor unto the country for them to be countenanced," by which he means tolerated. And then he says, "As for those that indulge themselves in idleness, the express command of God unto us is that you should let them starve." Now, in my book, I'm arguing that the Puritans gave the U.S. a legacy of that sort of mindset, that good versus evil, we are good, anyone who disagrees with us is evil, there's no point trying to understand the nuances, there aren't any nuances, and therefore feeling that people they regard as not with them or against them.
Well, it sounds very much like where we're living today. We're going to take a break right now. If you'll just stay with us, we'll be right back.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire, instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. using this same principle. Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Welcome back to the program. We're glad you're with us this morning. We're talking with author Frances Hill from her home in London, and she's discussing her latest book, Such Men Are Dangerous, The Fanatics of 1692 and 2004. You know, we were talking before the break about what life was like in the Massachusetts Bay Colony, and they were very superstitious, were they not?
Oh, yes, indeed. They believed very much that witches really existed. In fact, this is a very interesting aspect to the start of the Salem witch trials, because belief in superstition was possibly decreasing a little because science was advancing during the 17th century. The Bay Colony was a backward place in this sense, but word was coming from across the Atlantic, you know, about new scientific developments and so on. And the rulers of the Massachusetts Bay Colony were a little alarmed about this, and it was very much in their interest to reinforce superstition, because with the reinforcement of superstition went the blind belief in the very rigid religion, Puritan religion, that the rulers were upholding, and were seen as representing, you know, to an extreme degree. So one of their motives in fostering the Salem witch hunts, once they got started, the hysteria started in Salem Village, they weighed in and really made sure that the fear grew and affected the entire colony. And one of their main motives, really, was to reinforce this fear and superstition. And in my book, I argue that you do see a clear parallel between that and what happened in 2001, when after the 9/11 attacks, obviously those attacks really happened and the terrorists were real, whereas witches were didn't really exist. People just believed they did. But what was clearly parallel was the way in which the people in charge responded to these events. The Bush administration as we all know, whipped up fear and hysteria to the greatest possible degree.
Oh, absolutely. And he also used patriotism to unify the people in that one voice of fear, and that we have to go and attack the enemy before the enemy attacks us. Yeah.
Mm. Yes, yes. And what comes into this as well was that in what I think of as right-wing America, extreme right-wing America, of which, you know, the Bush administration is the most extreme example, there is that tendency to demonize that there was among the Puritans, so that there's a tendency to sort of try to encourage everybody to feel that the other is subhuman, really. It's so much easier to attack an enemy when you don't think of them as quite human as you are. And as we know, that happened in Vietnam, and I think it's happened in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's a mindset that makes people both fearful and able to forget that what the people they regard as the enemy are human beings with rights, as they have, and are not likely all to be uniformly bad. They're likely to be a mixture of good and bad, like all the rest of us.
That's right, yeah. And I did work on a large Native American research, historical research project, and this is one of the things that was very evident, that especially in the earlier scholarship that was published about them in the 1800s, which was, you know, they called them savages, and about 100 years later they changed, and now the political correct phrase is Native American, but we didn't always view them that way. And, you know, in order to slaughter a people, you have to marginalize them into a place that characterizes them as being not human, just like what you were saying. And that, I think, assuages the conscience of those that are exacting all kinds of horrible things on any group of people, like what we're doing in Iraq right now.
Yes, and makes them more fearful of them as well, because they have this almost larger-than-life fearfulness about them. You know, they're not human, they're more like devils, they're more, you know. And something I wanted to say about scapegoating, as you're saying, and I was saying, the Native Americans were really the Puritans' first scapegoats. And I think what's happened is that the Native Americans have had such an incredibly raw deal that they're now not really visible as scapegoats anymore. I mean, they don't serve as scapegoats anymore because their numbers were so hugely diminished. They don't, sadly, have any sort of real kind of force in terms of numbers or anything else in America.
Well, Francis, I hate to interrupt you, but if you can hold that thought, we're going to take another break.
Sure.
And we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Stay tuned to the Republic Broadcasting Network.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes 4 books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle.
For some time now, you've listened to our corny DidYouRobBillGates.com ads. So let's get serious for a moment. DidYouRobBillGates.com can really show you how to make money with your own home-based business and will give you the ability to quit your job, pay off debt, or how about buying some silver and gold for the future or retirement? What about just being around more for your family? DidYouRobBillGates.com can show you how to increase your cash flow so you can get the things in life you want. What if all it took was answering the phone? Could you do that? When the cash flow increases, it's amazing what you can do. It's about independence and freedom. DidYouRobBillGates.com can show you how. Don't wait any longer. Go to DidYouRobBillGates.com. That's DidYouRobBillGates.com.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today, 1-800-691-7898, and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
We're having a very interesting discussion about the new book, Such Men Are Dangerous, with the author, Francis Hill. And, Francis, before the break, I wanted to ask you about how did you first come to realize the correlation between the events in Salem and the current White House regime?
It was in the run-up to the Iraq War, at the beginning of 2003, I'd written three books about the Salem witch trials at that point. And I was just doing a lot of thinking, you know, about obviously what was clearly going to happen. And clearly, you know, America was going to invade Iraq. The US, the Bush administration had made up its mind. Nothing was going to stop it. That was glaringly obvious. And I couldn't have felt more strongly that this would be an absolute disaster. You know, I, like so many other people, had a sense of absolute dread about it. And in fact, I went on that march on February the 15th, 2003. There 2 million people marched in London, and it was bitterly cold. And I got home that night and I thought, isn't there anything I can do to try to stop this happening? Or to try to affect the outcome in some way other than, you know, freezing to death on a march. And it just kind of came to me, the fact that the Bush administration was so like the Puritan leaders in 1692, and what it was doing was so parallel to what they were doing when they took the Salem witch hysteria and used it for their own ends. And made it grow and caused a tragic situation as a result, you know, with innocent people dying and a lot of others suffering in one way or another. And I thought maybe I could write about that. I mean, I don't know. I felt I didn't know anything more than any other reasonably informed person about what was happening in terms of the run-up to the Iraq War, but I knew an awful lot about what happened in Salem. And the parallels were sort of so striking, and I do think they're very illuminating, actually, and that it really was worth trying to write about them and bring them to people's attention. And so that's how it came about. I wrote the book.
So when they came from England, they brought with them the cruel punishments such as cutting off of ears and boring holes in tongues. Do you see a parallel with that, with the discussion about waterboarding and all these other torture techniques?
Right. Well, there is a very clear and exact parallel between the Puritans introducing torture during the Salem witch trials and the Bush administration introducing torture after 9/11. Torture was, in fact, not legal under the law in the Massachusetts Bay Colony. I mean, it was actually expressly prohibited, you know, as part of the legal system. I mean, sure, they cut off ears and things. That was those were punishments after, you know, convictions for whatever it was. In those particular cases I was talking about earlier, they were they were convictions for people, Quakers defying the law by coming back into the country after they'd been banished. But what was new, what the leaders introduced in 1692 that was new was torture, just as it was introduced by the Bush administration to try to force people. In 1692, it was to force them to confess to be witches. And it did work. There were cases in which it did work. People did, you know, succumb and make confessions, which they retracted later, to having bewitched people. And
well, it's been, you know, it's been proven a historical fact that rarely does torture ever extract a truthful confession.
Mm, that's right. Yes. Sure. I mean, people will say anything. No, it's absolutely, I mean, it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary the way it is being used now by the Bush administration, you know, that they haven't twigged that it doesn't work. And of course, now, as a result, I mean, the military tribunals that the six Guantanamo detainees are going to be tried under now will have even less credibility, you know, in the eyes of the world than they would otherwise, because a lot of the evidence has been obtained by torture. I mean, that's we know that now. The CIA has actually said that three of the detainees made confessions under torture, under waterboarding.
Mm. Well, don't you think the American people have been so brainwashed about all this that brainwashing has sort of created a smokescreen, if you will, or a partition in their mind that separates their ability to see the truth, and if they heard it, if they ever heard the truth, they wouldn't recognize it. Our media here, as I think you will agree from your perspective, is a controlled substance in America.
Yes.
So we don't get the truth here. We really have to dig for it. That is one of the aims and the missions of the all of the guests on RBN, is to present truth to people and talk about stories that you're not going to hear in the mainstream press.
Yes. Yes, I must admit, I'm very aware of it. Because I live in England 9 months of the year and come to Connecticut 3 months of the year, I am aware, you know, of the difference. I'm not saying the media here is anything like perfect, but it's easier to get, you know, there is more of the truth in the mainstream media, in the Guardian newspaper, for example, which is national. I mean, I know the New York Times, you know, now is better than it was in getting the truth to the people who read it. But not many of the population do, of course. You know.
Well, I wanted to mention something. You've got a very interesting chart in your book, and you parallel the personalities of 1692 with the personalities in 2004, calling George Bush equal to Sir William Phipps, who was the governor of Massachusetts, Increase Mather and Cotton Mather, who were both ministers of the Boston North Church. You equate with Paul Wolfowitz, I can see the parallel with Bush and Phipps, but explain to us how in this parallel with Cotton Mather and Paul Wolfowitz.
Well, I label them the intellectuals. They are the ones who really had the theories, who expounded the theories in one way or another. I mean, Inglis Mather and Cotton Mather, of course, preached their ideas. Wolfowitz sort of wrote about his ideas and talked about his ideas, which were kind of very sort of important in making the events happen that did happen. And Inglis and Cotton Mather were strong believers in witchcraft and the dangers of it and so on. They were terribly important in whipping on the witch hunt and giving the sort of intellectual basis for doing so. They saw the witches as in league with the devil, with the Indians. Sorry, the Native Americans, they always called them Indians, which is why I slip into that sometimes. So I'm kind of thinking, you know, from their perspective.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. So they had a tremendous kind of motive to foster the witch hunt and the witch trials, and they gave the kind of intellectual basis for doing so. And Paul Wolfowitz, in the same way, you know, great believer in the project for the new American century. He supposedly, you know, sort of, well, I mean, in that period after, immediately after 9/11, he sort of got the ear of Bush and was arguing for invading Iraq as a result of this event having happened. And, you know, was a great one for sort of arguing about the importance of spreading freedom and democracy through the Middle East by force if necessary. And I think, I mean, all of them, to me they seem tremendously, you know, alike, because they are all ideologues whose thinking, in fact, is extremely muddled and sort of dominated by a kind of emotional stance. You know, they're thought of as good, clear thinkers. Well, they think of themselves as good, clear thinkers, and of course they're not at all. They're extremely muddled thinkers, you know.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, sort of had the power at that time to sort of push forward their ideas and get the people in charge to act, to try to, you know, achieve their ends. So that's the parallel there. Between them, and I think perhaps the most striking parallel, Phipps and Bush, as you said, the parallels are extremely striking. But and so are those between William Stoughton, who was the deputy governor of Massachusetts, and Dick Cheney, because they both had very much the same roles in relation to the person who was supposedly in charge. Stoughton was the same sort of deputy governor to William Phipps, the governor, as Dick Cheney has been vice president to Bush as president, telling them what to do, in other words, a lot of the time, really.
Well, yeah. I wanted to read something from a couple of passages from your book, and this is from Chapter 2, The Land of the Free. You say, the savagery in American society today is essentially what it was in 1692. It stems from an ethos of self-seeking without concern for social justice, parading, and righteousness. This leads to a view of the underprivileged and minorities as socially and morally inferior, deserving at best minimal assistance, at worst punishment. You know, I have to say that's a treatise on the Republican Party more than it is for the Democrats.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I do go on to say, I hope I do explain adequately sort of a bit later, that I'm talking about what I think of as right-wing America,
right,
which has been in the ascendant during the Bush administrations.
Yes.
And the extraordinary thing about America as a country is it has this whole other side, you know, which is almost the opposite which is full of, which I suppose I've been thinking about this, you know, the other legacy. Where exactly does that come from? To some degree, you can say it comes from the Founding Fathers. It comes from the Enlightenment, from thinkers like John Locke and de Tocqueville. And it's all about sort of equality and tolerance, separation of church and state, freedom of expression, you know, I mean, all those great things that are in the Constitution. That's all there. And in fact, when it comes to sort of voting patterns, they tend to go about 50-50. It's as though the country is split down the middle, really, between the legacy, the Puritan legacy, and that 18th century legacy. And now again, you know,
well, we're seeing that now with, exactly. You know, from Super Tuesday up until even last night, what a close race. I don't think that any of the political pundits or analysts last year at this time would have ever guessed at where we are right now and how the political parties on both ends feel like they're really in trouble. They're both in somewhat of a crisis. I know the Republicans do because there is a large constituency of Republicans that cannot tolerate somebody like McCain, who is now leading the pack, so to speak. Now, I wanted to also read, it was interesting to me, and jump ahead, Chapter 9, talking about September 11th. And you say the terrorist attacks of 9/11 were fodder for the neoconservatives, who now have a pretext for advancing their long-term agenda of invading Iraq, toppling Saddam, threatening to invade Syria and Iran, and remaking the world in America's image. The attacks also gave them opportunities to get their hands on Middle Eastern sources of oil, to wrangle lucrative contracts for their favorite businesses. I couldn't have put it better, and I totally agree with that. It was a pretext, and you do go on to acknowledge that there are a lot of people in this country that don't believe the government's propaganda about what happened there. Because if you examine it, you say, well, who really had the most to gain? Now, at the time that it happened, we didn't have the perspective that we have now with all the things that have come out. But now we understand that the Bush administration and the larger picture of the people behind him are the ones that really stand to benefit from this. Was there something quite similar in the characteristics of the Salem witch trials that advanced the aspirations, political and the social agenda that they had in the Massachusetts Bay Colony?
Very much so. I sort of touched on that a bit already by saying one of the things that happened or that they were trying to accomplish with propagating the Salem witch trials was the reinforcement of superstition, of sort of fear and superstition, which helped them keep power, I mean, the people who were in power at that time, in, you know, very much the same sort of way, kind of, you better vote for us because we're the only ones who can keep you safe, essentially. Although they didn't, I mean, the whole system was very different, so it didn't work quite like that, but that was, you know, it was essentially the same in that way. They also, actually, there was a particular dissident that they were targeting in the witch trials, a man who they saw as a great threat. That's a whole fantastic story in itself, how they targeted him and how they got him, and he was, in fact, eventually hanged, supposedly, as a witch. He was a minister. He was a tolerant, free-thinking minister who was working out in Maine as a minister, which was very much on the fringes of the colony, and he, instead of despising Anglicans and Quakers and Baptists, he took them into his flock and he preached them and so on. And I think he really emblemized everything that the leaders of that time were frightened of. You know, they were frightened of openness of mind and freedom of spirit and so on. And they personally hated him. And they were able to use the witch hunt, you know, to get him, because they had no other way to get him at that point, but they could accuse him of being a witch and convict him of being a witch at his trial and hang him. They also did gain, we think, I mean, the evidence isn't sort of totally clear-cut, but it looks very much as though William Stoughton, the deputy governor, gained lands and wealth.
Something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
Are you new to freeze-drying foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-drying foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
And we're back. Thanks for staying with us. This is our last segment of the program today. And Francis, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions just in summary. As a historian, when we study history, we can always find wisdom and a truth that applies to our life today. In your observation, what should we as a nation have learned that we seem to be repeating when we elected a president like Bush?
I think what America has to learn is to be much more wary of people who are essentially saying, we, America, are the best people in the world, we have all the answers, everybody ought to try to be like us. In other words, this perversion of patriotism,
mm-hmm.
Because that is so much part of what leads to disaster, you know. A foreign policy that's based on that attitude of mind is going to lead the country into absolute disaster and tragedy, as we've seen it do
over the last 6 years. And to be wary of, it's another part of the same thing, really. It's, you know, I am a leader who makes a lot of his religion, I think, is somebody to be wary of, because that shows a kind of mindset of, you know, I am good, God's on my side, so I know where evil lies.
Well, you say that Bush and his administration are the most extreme examples in modern times of the puritanical inhumanity. Tell me what you think from your perspective. How would you characterize the direction that Bush has turned America toward?
Well, it just seems absolutely disastrous. I mean, apart from, well, both domestically and in terms of foreign policy, I mean, domestically, the gap between rich and poor is greater than ever. There are more people in real poverty. I mean, that's something actually a lot of people outside America don't know about it.
That's right.
Sorry?
I was agreeing with you. That's right, yeah.
Yes. I mean, there's more really dire poverty in America, I have the impression, than in any other, you know, industrialized country. In fact, America is, I'm afraid, in many ways, more like a third world country than like a developed nation. And Bush has made it more so, you know. It's gone further in that direction. And, of course, in terms of foreign policy, the whole of the world is alienated from America now. I mean, there's just so much ground to make up in terms of making the rest of the world feel that it's a country with any moral authority at all.
Well, and your former prime minister pretty much committed political suicide when he aligned himself with the policies that took us into the Iraq War.
Yes.
We're just about out of time, Frances. I want to tell people how they can get a hold of your book.
Can I give you a toll-free phone number?
Yes.
They could. Okay, it's 1-800.
Yes.
310-8320.
800-310-8320. All right, great. Well, it was a pleasure having you on. It's a fantastic book.
I wish you
all the best with it. And again, it's called Such Men Are Dangerous by Frances Hill. That's all the time we have for today, everybody. I'll be back here tomorrow. And remember that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. Now go make it a good day.
With recent international flight